Oh my goodness, I am back. It has been quite a while. Welcome to Super Hungry, the podcast. I am your host, Virginia Anzengruber. Really working my Eartha Kitt, I'm sick, but I'm going to roll with it voice because I am a day after getting my wisdom tooth pulled. Spoiler alert, that hurts still. Still a thing that hurts. Wisdom teeth getting pulled. We haven't advanced far enough in medicine yet for that to be like a painless thing. So I'm chipmunking it today, and I'm really excited to be bringing you guys this episode. This is our season two finale, and man, oh man, it has been quite a season. I have had just the best year with this podcast. It's been so much fun, and I've grown so much. I've moved since then. We started the season in Los Angeles. We're ending it in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And I'm thrilled to say that I think I've found a good work-life balance that I've kind of been looking for. I'm really, really thrilled about the projects that I'm working on here. And I'm really excited about the people that are making up the community that I now get to call home. So I'm just happy and calm and peaceful. I've got one less tooth in my face now, but other than that, you know, all things are coming up Milhouse. So I'm really excited to be sharing this episode with you guys. It's the season two finale, and to give a little backstory context, I did this interview this past weekend at the Melbourne Independent Filmmakers Festival in a small town called Melbourne, Florida, which is actually my hometown. And it was at the movie theater that I worked at all through high school and a bit in college. And I have had a lot of firsts at that film festival. It was my first red carpet that I got to walk in 2013. And my first award as a filmmaker came there in 2015 when we won the Trailblazer Award for a short film that Stephen and I did called Party Foul. But really, that place for me when I was 15 and 16 was the place that kind of all of those, oh my God, wouldn't it be cool if dreams really kind of started coming to be, I think, more possible to me, because I was surrounded by films all the time, and this particular movie theater is independently owned. So the owners always make sure to play some of those independent films that don't necessarily get the huge national distribution. So I was getting to see a really wide range of stuff. And so I got to go back there this year for the festival, not as a visiting filmmaker, but as a podcaster. And I got to interview the man of honor at the festival and the winner of the Indie Star Pioneer Award. And that is Mr. Brian O'Halloran, who you know from the View Askew universe. He played Dante Hicks many times over, most notably and first off in Clerks, but has also played Hicks' cousins through some other films in the View Askew universe that Kevin Smith has brought us. And he was just so wonderful and nice and, you know, gracious and funny. And it was just a very wonderful kind of full circle moment for me. So I'm stoked for you guys to hear it. I am so grateful for the sponsors that I had that were able to make this episode possible. The West Michigan Film and Video Alliance is a 501c3 nonprofit, and they were officially launched in January of 2005. Their mission is to promote a thriving film and video production community within West Michigan. That basically means if you're a creative in West Michigan, they want to keep you here. They don't want to have to see you move to be able to get that work. So I appreciate them and their assistance in getting myself down to Florida, because they have really taken that leadership role in promoting the film industry as an alternative force for economic development. We lost film incentives a few years ago in Michigan, and this is an organization that I really believe in and I think could play a good part in potentially helping us to at least get some semblance of that back to be able to keep the creatives in Michigan. So a huge thank you again to the West Michigan Film and Video Alliance for all of their help. And to my lovely and talented art sponsor for this episode, if you've noticed my new cute profile that I have had that's been drawn. That's by Miss Odd Shatuk, and she is based out of Grand Rapids, Michigan. And you can find her on Facebook, I believe. It's Odd, A-U-D-E, Shatuk, S-H-A-T-T-U-C-K, and she's a part of Meander Arts. That's her business. So you can find her on Meander Arts. It's facebook.com/MeanderDesigns, actually. And she does illustrations and visual storytelling, and she's actually been doing cool journal pieces that are visualized as well. So you guys definitely should check her out. Again, it's Meander Arts, but that's at facebook.com/MeanderDesigns. Odd Shatuk, thanks so much for that new portrait, girl. I'm so excited. I also just bought one of her prints, and it's a cute little witch, and it's on my window, and it's perfect for Halloween. Guys, you have to check her stuff out. All right, and thank you. Thank you. Thank you again, sponsors, West Michigan Film and Video Alliance and Odd Shatuk. And I hope everyone listening enjoys this episode, the season 2 finale of Super Hungry the Podcast with Brian O'Halloran. Awesome. I am sitting here with Brian O'Halloran of Viewist Universe fame, and here today you're here at the Melbourne Independent Filmmakers Festival, because they couldn't make it a longer title, but you're here supporting Shooting Clerks, which is technically not a documentary. It is a dramatic retelling,
It's a biopic.
You know, as the industry would call it. First of all, thank you for having me on.
Thank you.
It's awesome here, being in Melbourne, Florida. This is pretty good. Within a 12-month period, I've been to Melbourne, Australia, and now
and
Melbourne,
Florida.
So I've got my Melbournes covered.
Do they compare in any way? Are they similar?
Well, it was funny. When I put it out on Twitter, I was coming to the festival, and I put down, Melbourne, I'm coming. And it was like the Australian fans like, oh, great, mate, you come back. And
I'm like, no,
I wish I was. Don't get me wrong. Well, I love Australia. And now I'm starting to love this town. This is
Really,
really cool. I got here earlier this morning. And got to see a bit of it while walking around, and now I'm here at the festival. And I got to say, really, really great interactions with guests here, which is really, really great. It's not such a huge festival that you're scurried away to this back area to get to your screenings and stuff. It's really, really cool. Tonight we had some really great shorts, and then we did some episodes of some food programs on Amazon.
Yep. Real Kitchens,
right. And they're giving us a sample of some play on that type of recipes we saw. So I'm enjoying it here.
That's awesome. So Clerks was a while ago now, but
As a matter of fact, yesterday was the 23rd anniversary of its theatrical release.
Congratulations.
October 19th of 94 is when it was released.
Now, if I'm correct, that was your first feature film.
That was my first feature film. That was Kevin Smith's first feature film. Well, pretty much everybody involved. It was our first feature.
And so you were born in New York, right?
I was born in New York in the Bronx. Lived there till the age of 10. My father had worked in northern New Jersey, Inglewood Cliffs, for the Renault Automobile Company.
Oh.
And he was just tired of that commute from the Bronx to New Jersey. So in 83, he moved to Palisade Park, New Jersey. Lived there for about 4 years. He then retired. And then we moved further, central New Jersey, Old Bridge, New Jersey, where I grew out my high school years, young adult years, and into my early 30s. And then the last 7-8 years, I've been back in New York City, where I moved just for work access and stuff like that.
Right. Did your parents ever have, inclination? Did you have inclination that you were going to get into acting and things like that?
I was more of a kid acting out. So acting up and acting out turned into acting.
Were you like the loud kid in class?
I was the youngest. I was the youngest of three Irish sons. So my oldest brother is 9 years older than me.
Oh, wow.
And my second oldest brother is 6 years older than me. And then I was born. Now, I was born in New York. Meanwhile, my brothers and my parents both all emigrated from Ireland.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so they came to New York in 65, and then I was born in 69.
That's
so
amazing.
We were straight up off the boat Irish. Like, I have my Irish passport. If I need to get out of here for some crazy reason, I can.
Who knows with the way things are going lately? It's always good to be prepared. I have the enhanced license now in Michigan, and I am 2 hours from Canada.
There
so, heyo.
Love Canada.
Oh, it's great. So, Clerks is obviously, it's the first movie. Listen, I'm sure you've done a million interviews, so you know what you did. I know what you did. $27,000 feature on credit cards. Yep. You guys got together. Was there any feeling when you were doing it that you were like, oh, we're going to like change the face of cinema? Or was it more just like, hey, I'm going to make a movie with my friends and these people that I love creating with?
Well, first of all, the misnomer that we were friends, we were not.
Oh.
So I didn't grow up in the neighborhood.
But did you know him at all before
not at
shooting?
All.
Wow.
Not at all.
Okay.
He held the people who I knew were the people at the First Avenue Playhouse, where okay. I had done stage theater at. So Kevin lived the next town over. And when he was trying to get casting for his film, he decided, well, what better place than to try the local community theater? So he went to the owners of the First Avenue Playhouse, Joe Bagnol and Donna Jean, and asked, hey, can I rent your place to hold auditions? And in return, can you then call up your stable of actors to come audition? Now, this is before our cell phones and the internet. This is 93.
Did you get a fax?
No, I got a phone call direct, you know, when people actually called you. I mean, there were answering machines and there were faxes, true.
We didn't screen in that
right.
more simple time.
Exactly. And said, hey, Brian, these guys are next month are having auditions for a film. And looking at the overview of casting, and you're the age range of the characters they're kind of looking for, you should come down. I was like, okay. The month came and went. I completely forgot about the audition. The first night came and went. By the second morning, I got a call at my mother's house going, you know, Brian, where were you? I thought you were going to, oh, my God, was that last night? Is there another night tonight, right? Because, yeah. So I came down there. I said, what do they need? They said, they need a monologue. I'm like, okay. So I cobbled together a monologue. I had done a show at another theater in the meantime, a dramatic play called Wait Until Dark.
Okay.
It was a film in the 70s that was a really, like, thriller kind of thing. As a matter of fact, Quentin Tarantino did a revival of it on Broadway, like, about 10 years ago.
Oh, wow.
I played this character called Mr. Rote, did this really intense kind of audition. Now, I didn't know what I was auditioning for, meaning the film-wise. Like, they didn't have this.
Did you have character
film.
Descriptions, though?
Not really, no.
Oh.
No. So it was just, like, come up, do your monologue. And see where you can fit in this
right.
whole thing. Like, I didn't go, I want to play the role of Dante. You know what I mean? I didn't know the script. I mean, I could have been auditioning for porn, for all I knew.
Not yet.
Not yet,
it's
right?
Too early in your career
yeah.
for that.
And so what happens is I do the audition. They call me back like 2 or 3 days later. I do a call back where I'm reading opposite Kevin this time directly. And we do the independent contractors on the Death Star scene. And he loved it. He says, what do you think? I said, oh, it's hilarious. The other guy is really hilarious. Who are they in the film? Because the night that I auditioned, I had asked one of the people who was helping Kevin out, how many principals are they? They said, oh, there's 6, but we already had them cast. Now, that were his friends is who he cast. And some people he had found in the day before
right.
audition. So I was like, oh, okay. So when he told me, like, what do you think of this character? I thought he was just like the Dante and Randall characters were just
like
a
one-off
day player
or something.
Character
right.
that
yeah.
the main characters come into a convenience store, overhear this conversation, and
right.
then the story moves on from there. So he goes, no, these are the two main characters. They're the name of the movie is Clerks, and you'll be playing the convenience store clerk, and then there's the video store clerk. So I was like, oh, I was told that they were already the roles were already cast. He goes, yeah, don't worry about that. So then that's how it happened. The guy who was going to be Dante still wound up in the film as a different role. And if you see, you know, as you'll see tomorrow here at the festival where we're doing this biopic called Shooting Clerks, it's about how Kevin made the movie.
But you're
you'll
also
see,
playing another character
I'm
in
also
the
playing
biopic.
Another, yes.
Yeah.
What was very clever about the writer and the producers of this film was we brought back quite a few of the cast members from the original Clerks who are obviously now, you know, much older, 20 years older in some
yes.
cases from when we originally played it, to play different parts, which were very, very, they're cool cameos when you see them pop up. And so, yeah, that's what's great about this biopic, Shooting Clerks, is that you're now seeing the story that has been told quite a few times in interviews, but now you're seeing it brilliantly
kind of unfold,
portrayed
yeah.
by incredible actors, funny enough, from Scotland, no less.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, within the, you know, Esk universe, you've come back as Dante multiple times. You've come back as Cousin Hicks multiple times. You know, how do you approach playing the same character kind of in multiple films? Obviously, they're within the same universe, but do you approach it as like a different kind of Dante?
Well, if I'm playing Dante specifically in other films, then yeah, it's kind of like getting on a bike. You don't
right.
you don't forget how to do it. You just, well, what road are we taking this bike on now? So that's pretty much what all right, I'm Dante, but what situations is Dante being put through now?
Right.
And what kind of aggravation is he getting from Randall? And it's been, and that's been an incredible fun ride playing that character and the other characters, the Sean Hicks and the the Gil Hicks and the, you know, Grant Hicks from Dogma. And then we're planning, hopefully by the November, December, January time, to start shooting Kevin's latest View Askew film.
It's the Jay and Silent
Bob.
Jay and Silent Bob reboot.
In which I've already pitched in the idea of, why don't I come back playing multiple Hicks characters, since allegedly this is supposed to be the last View Askew film, we'll see.
Well, I was gonna ask if there was any hope for Clerks 3. I'm assuming no. I've heard no.
I'm saying no as of right now, but you never know. I mean, what happened was we had everything. The script was written. Scripts were handed out. Kevin was doing his location shoots. Then this production company that got involved with Kevin that was producing it, that we hadn't used, but that we, meaning me and Jeff and other cast members, had not worked with before, they just, in the negotiation process of getting things done, it turned a left turn that didn't really work out, and Jeff was not having any of it. I mean, Jeff was...
Wasn't he hesitant to come back anyway? He's a reluctant actor
to begin with. I mean, that wasn't his gig. I mean, you'll even see it in the shooting Clerks, even the first film. He didn't really go to audition to be in the film. He went there just to goof on other people auditioning.
And it turns out that that's actually,
Kevin liked the fact that that's exactly what Randall is, a wise ass that wants to goof on people trying to make a living in life. So to see, it didn't take much for that to be pushed over, so to speak. So I'm hoping that, you know, there's always a hope, who knows, that something can be done. But I wouldn't put money on it right now. I wouldn't invest time into to saying, is it... In the meantime, quite a few of the elements that were in the original Clerks 3 script, I've been told, has been incorporated
kind of
in the Jay and Silent
Bob
script.
That's
so
awesome.
I know I'm coming back. I know I'm at least one of the roles I'm definitely playing is Dante again.
That's so cool.
So we'll see what happens from there.
That's amazing. So you've obviously a really large filmography. Are you ever planning on, you know, sort of creating your own creative universe in a way? Have you inspired by that?
I do. I have a couple of screenplays that I've been working on. I'm very peculiar and very picky about my own kind of writing as well. Plus, I'm looking for the right moments too. I've had this one Thanksgiving script that I've had bouncing around for about 5 years, and so I'm finalizing that right now. I'm getting to a point where I know what I want to shoot and where I want to shoot and who I would like to approach to be cast in it. It's a comedy. It's like kind of a family comedy.
I'd imagine.
With some kind of humor that people are familiar with. I have another kind of action drama kind of movie that I have that I'm working on as well. A lot of projects that I get involved in, I secretly start accidentally winding up associate producing it or producing it in some way. Like, I'm a very good problem solver on set. Like, I can't just sit and watch somebody spin their wheels and try to figure out how to solve something. So I'm like, you know, we could be doing this like this. And sometimes they're like, oh, well, that's a good idea. Or, you know, I know someone who could help us out with this. Next thing I know, like, hey, do you think you got someone who could do... And next thing you know, I'm roped into producing. So there's been a lot of that recently.
Has that sparked anything for you to produce outside material at all that you're not acting in?
Yeah, oh, no, yeah. Yeah, yeah, it has. But I still enjoy being in front of the camera. Yeah. I've been doing a bit more stand-up comedy the past 3 years.
Yeah.
Just recently, a very good stand-up comic friend of mine hosted a celebrity roast of myself, which hopefully we'll have that out
on
the interweb
soon.
Kevin did the opening for us, and then we had the guys from Comic Book Men come and do a set each.
Yeah.
And then a couple of other stand-up comics do it, and then I got up to do my rebuttal to everybody, and it went really, really well. So that's another aspect I've been exploring. So
that's awesome. So I'm going to take one question from the Super Hungry Podcast fans. So Lee Bretschneider from Florida has a question, and he says, if you could have Dante cameo in any superhero movie or TV franchise, what would it be, and what would he gripe about to the main character?
Ooh, great question.
Yeah, Lee's a big comic book nerd. It is a good question, though.
Superhero movie.
Or TV franchise, if you want to go Marvel.
TV franchise, right. It would be funny to... I think it would be funny to see Dante wind up on the Big Bang Theory somehow. And maybe either take over the comic book store. Like, he leaves Jersey.
He wouldn't be like another apartment mate or anything like that.
Yeah.
He'd just be a...
Maybe, who knows? But, I mean, they're all having kids now, so I don't see him doing that. But I could see him taking over a comic book shop.
That would be really funny.
Or maybe if it's like maybe in Gotham.
Oh yeah, maybe he's just and he just gripes about the crime, he but just, he never he moves.
He's constantly pestering Batman, like criticizing Batman, like the way he's.
Would he have like a miniature bat signal that somehow he got? And I feel like there would be a way that you would be disappointed in Batman. You'd be annoyed with him. Maybe I don't know. I feel like Dante would find.
It'd be funny if Dante, being let's say, as we last left off Clerks 2, Dante and Randall had, with the help of Jay and Silent Bob, had purchased the convenience store. So it'd be the Quick Stop. So it'd be funny if he branches out to another Quick Stop, let's say in Gotham, and he's got the inside scoop on what's going on. Like he's his inside, you know, Bruce Wayne's inside man for the dirt as what's the word on the street. Meanwhile, the word on the street is just what Jay and Silent Bob find out for him. I think that'd be a funny.
I feel like we need to make that sketch like right now.
Or at least
now.
A short, an animated short would be hilarious.
So, obviously, super hungry. We talk a lot about the fire, the passion that it takes to do what we do. You know, and I, as a younger filmmaker, really, when I started this, the whole purpose was to hope that people hear it and hope to know that like. Just do it, you know, like there isn't anything stopping you except for the will to do it, you know what I mean? And so what would if you had advice to give to up-and-coming filmmakers or someone who's graduating high school and is maybe gonna thinking about a career, you know, what would you say to them?
Be open to criticism, first
off. Oh, wow. I actually haven't heard that
be open to criticism, because if you get defensive right off the bat, you
won't learn
listening.
Anything
not listening, you're not learning. And if there are filmmakers like, I'm making my piece. I don't care if anybody likes it. This is what I want to say. And I give them all the props for that. But if you want to continue in the industry and make stuff that you want people to see and reach and be touched by, listen to it. Take your work. Have a staged reading. Go to your local community theaters. Even if it's the next town or two towns or a whole city away, you reach out to community theaters. They will help, like, writers with their pieces. And you get a cast of people so you can hear it and flesh it out and then have it in front of an audience. Have a live stage reading and you take those notes and have two or three of those type of readings every couple of months on your project and flesh it out. Once you have a really solid script that you believe in and then you get people behind you who believe in the project and want to do it, and let's say they volunteer their time or their talent and stuff like that, the one thing you don't want to skimp on, I swear to God, is
food.
Food.
Yeah.
It's the catering. It's straight up catering. And I'm not just saying... Don't make Domino's your caterer. And I'm not saying Domino's, don't be coming after me. I'm not saying Domino's not a decent pizza, but it's not good for every
I'm
night.
So happy you said that, because that is literally when, as the advice I say, and as a producer, there's been so many no-budget things that I've done, but I'll make sure that we have $1,000 for catering.
Correct. And sometimes you can even get away with cheaper, because if you find people that is part of your cast or is part of your crew, whose mom is a phenomenal cook or whose dad is a phenomenal cook or whose great-grandfather owns a restaurant in town, or you have a connection with someone who works in town at a restaurant, you can get a really discounted rate at just pans of lasagna or pans of, steamed whatever, or you get some... Mix it up. And then, of course, always have your vegetarian, vegan kind of crew members covered with an option. And don't just put a salad and go, like, that's your option. Like, let them know that you care.
Give them something with protein that isn't meat.
Get them something that's like a mushroom protein or something that's like a quinoa protein or something like that. That they can, because if you're asking people to volunteer 12 to 18-hour days sometimes, and sometimes in exteriors that are in terrible weather or in cold or whatever, or extreme heat, you got to feed them. You got to really take care of them and make sure that they're the ones that you're caring for at that time, because they're the ones that are getting your dream done.
Because that's the thing. I think a lot of people, when they're starting out, you think you need a budget, but so much of that budget can just be sweat equity.
Right.
You know what I mean? It can just be that love and that drive.
And the other thing I would recommend, if you're going to pay any crew member on this whole thing, pay your sound guy. Find a sound guy and pay them. There's one thing it just irks me when I watch some films, and I get it. You don't have the money to do it. So you go on with it anyway to get your story told. I get it. But sound mix, when the sound mix is off and from literally cut to cut, from just coverage, from you talking, then I'm telling, like, mine is louder than theirs, or there's more background noise when you do my takes than yours. And it's a good sound guy will cover that, will get the ambient noise to then, once you do in post, you can cover that. So that's another important issue. Otherwise, technically, you're right. The technology has become cheaper and cheaper and more accessible to everyday people. I mean, there are entire festivals that are just strictly films that are made on phones.
Well, Tangerine was shortlisted for an Oscar two years ago, and that was all on an iPhone. They closed that donut shop in L.A., by the way, which is really sad.
Oh, well.
Well, I think all of that's really good advice, and it's something that I don't know if any of my other guests have pinpointed it as specific as that, and I really appreciate that, because I think for people it's a lot easier to feel like they, they've got this great idea, and, you know, you want to show it to your people. But would you say maybe that when you are kind of having these readings and having these notes, maybe pick creative people that you trust? And, you know, because I just think about it, and, like, I show my grandma something, and she's not going to necessarily maybe give me the same notes that a contemporary would.
Correct.
Or something like
it's
that.
It's definitely,
you know,
good to have a contemporary. Once again, local theaters will find you other writers to talk to
That's
have
cool.
sit in the audience. Go to film schools. Film schools will loan you their people to listen in on things. You know, ask a professor to just read it, and they'll be like, well, you're not taking my class, or they'll charge you. Some readers will charge $100 to read your stuff and then give you notes.
Yeah.
There are people like Bob Hawke, who discovered Kevin Smith, who discovered so many great filmmakers, so many that they made a documentary about him called Film Hawk.
Okay.
If you ever get a chance to see an amazing documentary,
it
won so many awards last year. It's about Bob Hawke, who discovered so many filmmakers, and he's a consultant for filmmakers, and you pay his fee. I don't know how much it is. I'm saying a couple $100, but that might be 93 prices. But he'll read it, he'll give you notes, and he'll give you advice is how to submit this once you're done.
That's
you know,
cool.
to film festivals and stuff like that. It's those type of things. Open yourself up for it. You know, I tell actors, especially, if you want to get into this industry, you better be able to hear the word no 85% of your life and not take it personally and just go, well, they went a different way.
Yeah.
Sometimes it has nothing to do with you, except maybe you're the wrong height.
Yeah.
They probably already picked the female co-star or your male co-buddy, and you just physically don't look right together in their scheme of what looks right. You know what I mean? And you have to kind of define you. You know, you can't let that define you. You got to just keep going on.
Which is so hard, you know. That,
it is.
And that actually leads into kind of the last question, because I know, you know, got the festival kind of booming here. But, you know, I feel like there are so many walls to getting a project done. You know, there's getting a project out. And
not if you're willing to look at a man's shower, apparently. Just saying. These are just jokes, folks. Anyway, go ahead.
I wasn't even going to touch it, but yeah.
Neither were they.
So, you know, I think there are a lot of times where you can get really discouraged. You can kind of feel like something that you put your whole heart or year into then amounts into maybe nothing, in air quotes. You know what I mean? Not what you were expecting to. Has there been a time in your career where you've hit a wall like that and where you kind of were just like, fuck it, I'm done? And then if there was a time like that, what was it that, like, brought you back?
Early in my career, when I was doing theater and then I stopped, I was dating this girl and I was just wrapped up in the relationship. And I was working I worked for a supermarket chain for 4 years, and that was strictly what I did. Dated this girl, vacationed, hang out, worked supermarket job, was making a really good salary for my age at that time, especially. I remember when I quit that job and told my mother I was good, because I had then made Clerks and things were picking up and I was doing more plays. When I quit that job, you know, I was clearing like $520 a week at the age of 20, you know what I mean, which is crazy back then. My mother was, you know, she's Irish, so she's like, what the heck would you be? She didn't say heck, she cursed. She's like, what the heck would you do that for? People always need to eat, grocery stores will never go out of business. So, what got me out of that was I wasn't – the relationship with the girlfriend was winding down. I wasn't happy with that job because that wasn't my passion, obviously. And when I would go to films or I'd see plays and I'd go with some friends, I'd kind of be like, man, so-and-so, they didn't – I would have done it different, or I would have done it something different, or this could have been better. And my friends just got tired of me bitching.
Right.
But I'm like, well, then why don't you go back into it? Why don't you get back into it? And my one friend found this audition at the First Avenue Playhouse. Says, you're going to this audition, I'm coming with you. I'm just going to – we're doing this. You're doing it. Well, you're going to get up there and you're going to do it. And
you needed a boot in the ass.
And I did. And it was my boot in my ass. And we're still best friends to this day.
That's awesome.
And it's that type of thing that helps you move on with all this. It's just like you kind of need that support system. Other artists, as much as we're all like, oh, that guy, you know, he's a blah, blah, blah. And we're all competitive in that sense. When they're like, oh my God, I just got cast in so and so, it's awesome, and you're like, that's great. And in your head, you're like, son of a bitch,
right? Why wasn't it me?
It?
Yeah.
Right, right. But at the same time, it's good to have that circle of support.
Well, because I think in a way, there's something about that that you're not objectively, or you're not personally mad at that person. You're objectively irritated at the situation. But I think there's something
it's
about
just human nature.
Well, of course, but I feel like working with people that are talented and that you appreciate their talent. It's like what is that phrase of like metal sharpening metal or something like that, where you kind of, you know,
oh yeah,
their talent makes you want to kind of rise
correct
to that
when
level.
I see,
you know,
amazing films, it gives me like, yeah, so yeah, yeah, this can be done this way, and
yeah,
it can be done right for what whatever little or whatever walls they had to get over.
That's,
you know,
awesome.
I do every time I go to different towns and different cities and I'm at gatherings of different types and I'm introduced to the local film commissioner or whatever, and they're like, hey, we'd love to have you come down to our film festival and stuff like that. And I'll sit in, and or I'll be either asked to be a jury member for the panels, or do a panel, or they'll do a retrospective of some of the films I've done. And like tonight, like I got to see some interesting shorts and great topics, and seeing it shot very well. And no matter what, their stories are being told. And that's it. It's about, do it. Tell your story. If your story's not being told, Kevin made Clerks because he didn't see movies like guys just hanging out at their workplace bitching about other things and talking about pop culture like Star Wars and comics or whatever. And now he's like the iconic king of that type of culture, that
yeah,
slacker, Generation X voice, nerd culture that is now dominating the entertainment world. I
yeah
mean, the bigger movies that make the most money these days are all the superhero type movies.
Yeah. I think that is a wonderful place to stop. I have had the best time talking to you. Thank you so much.
No,
this has been
you
wonderful.
Do I you look have forward to seeing some of your stuff,
oh,
too.
Thank you. Do you have any links or things you want to plug? What do the people need to know
absolutely
about you?
Absolutely. If you want to keep in touch with me, the best way is through Twitter, and my Twitter address is Brian C. O'Halloran at Twitter. It's also the same address for Instagram. You also can find me on Facebook, my Facebook fan page, which, by the way, it's all me. It's not staff. Is the Brian C. O'Halloran at Facebook. That's the best way to do it. I'll be coming to some local Comic-Cons around the United States. I'll be in Oklahoma City next weekend for Wizard World Oklahoma City. I'll be in England the following weekend at the Isle of Wight Comic-Con, and then the following weekend after that, I'm in Austin, Texas for Wizard World Austin.
You've got a busy next couple
and
weeks.
And that's
man
it. And then that's it. And it's funny, in the meantime of all this, I'm in the process of a move. So,
oh my God, yeah, and a move in New York.
Yeah, moving from New York, I'm gonna move a little bit more west. Not the West Coast, but a little bit more west. I'll still be within 2 hours of New York City.
Oh, nice. There's something nice about not being quite in a big city. I'm like 2.5 hours from Chicago, and
look,
it's amazing.
I lived in the Bronx for 10 years. I've lived in New York City on the borough of Staten Island for 7 years. Central Jersey is only 45 minutes from Manhattan.
Yeah.
I'm usually in Manhattan every week and a half. I'm in there for either some sort of meeting or some sort of get together.
Right.
I'll be in Sundance this year promoting a company called Brightshot.
Awesome.
They're one of the number one lighting companies for television and film. A good friend of mine owns that company, and he wants to throw a couple of parties up at the Sundance Film Festival.
That's awesome.
So I'll be up at the Sundance Film Festival the last 5 days of the festival promoting for Brightshot. So if you see me up there, that's what we'll be doing up there.
Awesome.
Hey, folks, this is Brian O'Halloran. You might know me from such great independent films as Clerks, Mallrats, Vulgar, Brutal Massacre. And you're listening to the Super Hungry Podcast.